Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Let's talk about sex and consent on campus. Navigating Sex in the Gray Zone is a new project from the New York Times, and we're going to bring the two leaders of that project right on. Gender editor Jessica Bennett and Modern Love editor Dan Jones led the project. They collected the stories of college students dealing with the issues of consent. Jessica and Dan, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we'll open up the phones with some particular questions of yours as we go. But why do you call it the gray zone, Jessica?
You know, since the Me Too movement began, I think we've unearthed a lot of different types of ailments in our society. So sexual harassment, widespread. Of course, sexual assault, a real thing. In the Eric Schneiderman case, of course, this week, intimate partner violence. But there's this other realm of this kind of murky area of consent in which neither party may have the same interpretation of what happened, and yet nobody feels great about it. And we saw that happen when the Aziz Ansari case a few months back. And since that point, people have kind of referred to this as the so-called gray zone, this murky area of consent.
And Dan, why focus it on campus?
Well, I think this conversation is particularly loud on campus. Administrators have to deal with it. Students, it's often their first experiences. Alcohol is prevalent, and people are experimenting, and they're sort of exposed to all these experiences they don't know how to feel about.
If there was one question that elicited the most interesting responses, and you would like some of our listeners, if they're current college students or no current college students, to kind of continue the reporting, in a sense, with their stories, what might that question be, or one of those questions be? Dan, anything leap right to mind?
Well, the question that was so powerful to me that came out of these stories that surprised me was that women were consenting over and over to sex they didn't necessarily want. And the question is why? And there were so many answers to that, and it had to do with being polite, with thinking the guy, they owed it to the guy, with just wanting to get something over with. And that struck both of us of why? Why is this happening over and over and over in 2018?
Jessica?
And I think the larger question is, you know, most of us probably have an experience we're not quite sure how to process or digest. And so the prompt that we initially put out to students was, is there a sexual experience, a sexual encounter that you're still thinking about? And so that's the question I'd pose to listeners.
So listeners, you got it. And if there's anybody listening currently in college, have you had a sexual encounter that you're still processing, still deciding what to make of it? Tell us that story. You're going in public, when you talk on the radio, you can use a different name, but you're still going in public. So if you think it's helpful to you or helpful to the larger world to have this gray zone described, 212-433-WNYC, or anyone who's been in contact with anybody who's a college student in this area, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For gender editor Jessica Bennett and Modern Love editor Dan Jones from The Times on their Navigating Sex in the Gray Zone area. I guess the fact that question turned into the one that elicited so many interesting responses, it also reflects on the popularity of that story, Cat Person, which was published in The New Yorker, mm-hmm. and, you know, took off so much and went so viral. That's another thing that was about a gray right. area and consenting to sex that the protagonist really didn't want. And it's it shows how salient this topic is.
Yeah, you know, I think this is something that potentially before Me Too, we didn't quite have the language to talk about. You know myself, I've been in various situations, and I wrote about Cat Person at the time, where I didn't quite know how to process it. And I didn't want to be in the situation, but I didn't quite know how to say no. And I didn't know how to vocalize the no. And I think a lot of this is really wrapped up in expectations, in gender norms, in how we think we're supposed to behave. You know, women are supposed to be a certain way. If you do want sex, sometimes you're encouraged not to say yes because that would be deemed slutty or too easy. But if you do say no, there's sort of this constant back and forth with the idea that it's negotiable. And I've heard from a number of men, and we heard from men in the series saying that, you know, what they learned was that no means try harder. And I think this conversation also can't be had without talking about sex education. You know, when we don't have the language to talk about this stuff, then of course you're a college student. This is one of your early experiences. It's all mixed in with alcohol and drinking and expectations and potentially peer pressure. And you might not know how to articulate.
Dan, can you add to the differences in the responses of the college students you interviewed along gender lines, men and women, maybe even describing the same situation differently or similar situations?
Yeah, we did hear from men, which we heard more from women, but still a lot of men wrote in, which we were so happy about. And a lot, you know, some of the men's stories were, I was too drunk to consent. This woman had sex with me. I sort of woke up while it was happening almost. Is this a problem? You know, and they felt uncomfortable about it. One guy in this what I thought was sort of a typical guy response said, "Well, no harm, no foul." But he still felt uncomfortable about it. The other thing that men I think recognized both in the Cat Person story and more in the Aziz Ansari story was they recognized their own behavior as being not quite right. And that was sort of refreshing to hear in our sample.
And I think in the Aziz Ansari story, just to refresh for listeners who may not remember, this was a case where a woman came out anonymously in an online publication and accused him of basically getting her into a situation she didn't want to be in and not listening when she said no. And what was so fascinating about that story to me was that Aziz then released a statement saying he had no idea, but it was these two people in the same situation with completely different interpretations of it. And it wasn't necessarily that they said different things in the moment, or at least not that we know of, but that there's so much meaning around small actions. And sometimes we can interpret those in different ways.
Let's take a phone call. We're going to try Zach in Queens. You're on. Oops, what happened there? I clicked on Zach and it seemed to hang up his phone. So,
sorry, Zach.
Let's see if this happens when I try Kevin in Morris Plains. No, he's there. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'm going to breathe deep. I've been out of college a long, long time. I was in college. I was involved with a woman in extracurricular activities over a number of weeks. You know, we were attracted to each other. We were both very flirty. Again, we were in our 20s. She invited me back to her place, you know, one morning. You know, we had breakfast. She invited me to her room. We got involved in romantic activities. And there was a point where a lot of men would probably call this the point of no return, where she said, you know, I can't do this. And I'm not looking for any accolades. I'm not looking for any support. I just want other guys who are of an age and involved in activities to hear this, okay? She said to me, you know, I can't do this. And I respected her and I stopped.
Kevin, thank you for sharing that story. Jessica, why are you smiling?
I think it's really illustrative of the way that consent can actually be withdrawn at any point. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why we chose to focus this on college students or college age people is in part because this is such a robust conversation happening on campus. You know, on almost any campus you go to today, if you are a freshman, you have to undergo some sort of mandatory sexual assault training. And oftentimes consent training is a part of that. And so you learn about all of this terminology. And it's almost vastly beyond what the general public, I think, understands about consent. So there's these terms like affirmative consent and enthusiastic consent. And the idea that you can no longer say no, you must actually say yes to whatever it may be. But this sense that, yeah, maybe you did think you wanted it in the moment. Maybe you did invite someone back to your room. And then in the middle of it, you changed your mind. And that's okay.
And maybe the more interesting story in that couple is the woman's story. It's nice that Kevin didn't rape her after she said, no, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. But there was a woman who was in a situation that she was moving forward with consensually, if that, you know, if assuming everything Kevin said was true. And then she decided and articulated, stated, I can't do this. And I think a lot of your reporting is that a lot of women in that situation then don't give themselves permission to say that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we heard a lot of different reasons for that.
And we also heard that this is not, for a lot of people, this is not comfortable to talk about in the moment. That they're hoping their signals are read. And sex, you know, to a lot of people is supposed to be mysterious, and you're supposed to go based on emotions and signals, and a man thinks, oh, I'm supposed to take the upper hand, and I'm supposed to push this forward if it's going to happen. And there were women we heard from who said, who were with a man who was being incredibly cautious and asking questions at every point.
Respectful.
And she said, stop doing that. That's sort of killing
mood.
The supposed romance, you know. So,
right.
In a way, you know, it's such a complicated dynamic.
Because even in that story, there's another way that it could have gone without being sexual assault, which is the guy could have tried to continue to cajole her.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of our favorite quotes from what we got was no. The phrase "no" does not mean convince me. Because the initial no's to a lot of people, they take that as, well, why not? You know, what can I do to make you say yes, essentially?
Right.
And there were other...
And if it went exactly the way Kevin described it, maybe that's where he gets the most credit in mm-hmm. not taking no as meaning convince me.
Exactly.
Sarah Jane in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. You have a story for us?
Yeah, so, I can't believe I'm on. This is crazy. thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm from Texas originally. I've been living in New York. I went to school in upstate New York, and I've been in the tri-state area for the past, you know, 10 years or so. My sister is currently a senior in college at a really small Christian school in Pennsylvania. We were both kind of raised in this really evangelical Christian home with abstinence-only sex education. And my first sexual experience, I was raped. That was in high school. And then my sister has recently kind of told me and shared her experiences with me. And she's had pretty much the exact same experience of sexual assault and rape as her first experience with sex. And then repeatedly finding ourselves in these situations where we don't know what it is that we want because we were never taught to know how to know that. So, you know, listening to each other in these situations and listening to your partner is so important, but I also just, you know, for my own self, my journey has been to listen to what it is that I want and to practice doing that ahead of time so that when I'm in those moments when I'm not totally sure if I'm into something or not into something, being able to reference my own education of who I am and what it is that I want. And I think when you take that away from people, especially young women, you leave them with no resource to be able to come to the table and have the conversation. So it's been tough to hear that my sister has gone through, you know, she's 7 years younger than I am, so gone through the same kinds of experiences, but I'm proud that this Me Too movement has really brought us together and made us more vocal about how we can help each other and educate each other and make better decisions as we kind of drift away from the things we were brought up in.
Do you think that there's any lesson for others or for parents listening right now that ties to the way you were brought up or to anything else from your experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I can't really talk to my parents about this. It's not something that's acceptable or okay. Like, sex is difficult to talk about. And when you come from evangelical Christian parents, it's really difficult to talk about. And I'm sure lots of other walks of life struggle with it. And I think, you know, safety is the number one thing for me at this point in my life, being safe, making safe choices. And I think to neglect to talk about something because you don't want your kids to be making choices is to neglect them, or to not be giving them the tools that they need to make the choices when they're in the situation. So, you know, just giving this wash of abstinence-only sex education really doesn't prepare people for knowing what's in the world in general. And if anything, you know, parents who struggle to talk about this stuff, just know that it still happens. It's still going on around people. And it's far better to be prepared and know how to put a condom on, for example, than to find yourself in a situation and not know what's going on and not be able to make correct decisions. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
It sure does. I think that's really great for people to hear everything that you said. Sarah Jane, thank you so much. I'm sure it took some...
Thank you. Thank you guys for the work you're doing. It's awesome.
Thank you very much. And thanks for your courage in putting some of this, you know, some of your very disturbing story on the radio. The word she came to at the end as the moral of the story, Dan, safety. That's a buzzword on campus, right? That's a hot word on campus. It's a word that probably is being used more than it was a generation ago on campus. And then there's backlash to people wanting to emphasize safety, safe spaces, things like that, mm-hmm. where people get called snowflakes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Did you hear the word safety or safe come up a lot in the responses you got from college students?
I can't say we did, unless Jessica remembers something different. It was more feeling feeling pressured, feeling constantly pressured. That was the that's the most common word sense that I got from these stories.
Yeah, there were a couple. What we wanted to do was really let students speak in their own voices. So we weren't making an assessment on what they were saying. We were curating. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But we did want to provide something actionable at the end. And a lot of the students, in fact, had very good advice mm-hmm. on how to negotiate consent or how to navigate it. And I think where we did see safety come up was in terms of having a safe word in some cases. You know, romantic partners who decide on one, and if somebody isn't uncomfortable, if they feel maybe not at liberty to explain it in so many ways, they say apple or whatever it may be.
So if some powerful man in politics is having sexual encounters with you and all of a sudden starts hitting you really hard and you say apple, hopefully he'll stop.
One would hope, though. Doesn't see him in the current situation.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio with just a few minutes left with Modern Love editor Dan Jones from the New York Times and gender editor Jessica Bennett from the New York Times on their new project released today, Navigating Sex in the Gray Zone, about sex and consent on campus. And Charlotte in Somerset County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The comment that I have to make, I am a young woman. I graduated college about 5 years ago, and I had an experience where I had a friend who was an occasional sexual partner of mine, and one time we were having a sleepover, and in the morning, you know, I was woken up with seduction. Now, you know, I wasn't exactly in the mood. I, you know, this is one of those situations that I have felt weird about, but here's kind of what I'm thinking about this whole gray zone scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, victims, so-called victims, they need to have the agency. It's kind of like almost an internal spiritual solution, but they need to feel confident in themselves, and they need to feel like they have the agency to say no when they're uncomfortable with something. So, you know, one of those things is perhaps not agreeing to have sex with someone you don't know very well and don't trust, who, you know, maybe get to know somebody a little bit better before you agree to go to bed with them. Another possible thing people can do, you know, especially young people in college who don't have a lot of experience with this, is, you know, they might want to think about not drinking so much, or, like, not doing drugs and not putting themselves in states where they can become victims, where their judgment is impaired, and they might consent to things that they wouldn't otherwise consent to. So, you know, and it's, like, also my mother raised me to just always be, like, aware of my body, always be aware of the situation that I'm in. So she, like, taught me how to, like, kick a man, like, in a place where it hurts, where she taught me how to, like, jab an eye to, like, stand up for myself if I'm really being attacked and if somebody's not listening to me when I'm saying no. So I agree with one of the previous callers who said that parents need to talk to their children. But I also think that, you know, parents need to tell their children, you know what, like, just be aware of where you are and, like, this time to defend yourself. Because, for example, the Aziz Ansari story, I felt bad for him. I thought it was, like, embarrassing for him that he thought he did nothing wrong because this girl drank with him, went home with him, you know, and she engaged in oral sex with him, according to the story that I read. So from his perspective, she did not give any indications that she was not consenting. She just felt kind of weird, and she was upset that he didn't realize that she felt weird. And then she went on and embarrassed him with this story about the awkward sexual encounter, where she had just as much power as he did throughout the whole thing. So that's what I think.
Charlotte, thank you so much. And I can hear how upset you are. And, you know, it took courage to call in with this. And I really appreciate how you put what you think the lessons of your experience are right out there so other people can learn from them. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're almost out of time. Did the stories that you collected from college students come in via print? Was this a print communication project, or did you hear, you know, the emotion in people's voices at the same time as we've heard from Charlotte and some of the other callers?
This was a print project, so people submitted their stories, and we also allowed for them to upload visuals. So a lot of text messages. And it was fascinating to see sort of from a distance these live conversations that had happened between people, oftentimes after the fact, trying to make sense of it. And in some cases, these text chains were almost more illustrative than the stories themselves.
And saying things like, you know, with a woman complaining about calling a man out for what happened the night before and him responding by text and then her saying, ha ha, it's okay, ha.
Right,
and
the really nuance in the communications, you know.
To sort of undermine her own
complaint. Thing, yes, that was the thing I kept noticing is, you know, women saying, can we talk about last night? I'm not really sure what happened. And then sort of softening it with an LOL.
Mm-hmm. And text images, you mean screenshots of text message exchanges. There weren't photos as attachments, really, that you're talking about, right?
No photos.
Text exchanges,
and everything has remained anonymous.
So what happens next? Is this a one-shot that's out today in the Times, or is this something that leads to something more ongoing?
I think we're going to see what the response is. It's out today. You can see it at newyorktimes.com/campusconsent. But I was thinking this morning, you know, maybe the next iteration of this is really asking readers and listeners, where did they learn about sex? You know, how did they learn? Where was their sex education? Because I think that's actually where this all begins. And it's
really
so
different.
There's
really a lot of ignorance about that. One woman said, I had learned how to give oral sex, but not how to say no to giving oral sex.
And a number of men said, you know, they learned from pornography.
Yeah, that too.
Navigating Sex in the Gray Zone, out from the New York Times today, about sex and consent on campus. We thank gender editor Jessica Bennett and Modern Love editor Dan Jones. Thank you both so much for coming in and sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.